award goes to Millennial at the Movies. Welcome to Millennial at the Movies, a podcast review of the good, the bad, and the ugly Oscar-winning movies. Grab a bucket of popcorn and enjoy. So, I have decided to do something that most people in their 20s love to spend their nights doing, watching movies that are older than their grandparents. Am I right? Oh, wait, did I say most people? I meant myself. I am your millennial at the movies, and I will be kicking off a special podcast reviewing all 88 Academy Award winners for Best Picture. Why? Because I love movies and I'm kind of crazy. Oh well, I enjoy it. I'm going to be looking at every single movie to see, how great of a film is it? Did it deserve to win Best Picture? And will people my age like this movie? Without further ado, I present to you the first Best Picture winner, a silent film from 1927 called Wings. I'm gonna warn you guys, there's gonna be spoilers. Wings is a 1927 silent war film released by Paramount, directed by William Wellman, and stars Clara Bow, Charles Buddy Rogers, and Richard Arlen, with a special appearance by Gary Cooper. I got some fun facts about him later. The film opens with a title card that dedicates the film to the combat pilots that served in World War I. A nice touch considering that Wellman was a combat pilot himself. We then see two of our main characters, Jack Powell, played by Rogers, and Mary Preston, played by Bo. They're fixing a car together in synchronized movements that are cute as a button. I appreciate it, that's for sure. Mary is your prototypical girl-next-door character, and she's just madly in love with Jack. But Jack, he only sees her as said girl next door, and he's got a thing for the local city girl, Sylvia Lewis. She is the complete opposite of Mary because she's the pretty one from the city, she's very sophisticated, and she's pretty much eye candy in the film. Sylvia already has a man though, David Armstrong, the wealthiest man in town. David, played by Arlen, is pretty much committed to her and Sylvia to him, but she still sees Jack on the side as more of a pity kind of person. She's just reluctant to reject Jack so she won't hurt his feelings. You know, what a nice person would do. But before we dwell too much on the romance stuff, war is approaching! So Jack and David have to say their goodbyes to their families and their loved ones. Problem is, the loved one is the same girl, Sylvia. So we got a little bit of a love triangle going on. So, Sylvia has a locket with her picture in it, and the note on the back of the picture, paraphrasing here, it reads that she loves David, her boyfriend, David. You know who I didn't say? Jack. You know who doesn't realize this? Jack. Jack, like a big idiot, a big naive, wide-eyed dreamer idiot, that's his character. So he assumes the picture is for him because Sylvia and him are so in love and they're going to get married and this is just a testament to their love. Too bad Sylvia never actually explains to Jack that she's in love with David. Oops. Well, the woman that is in love with Jack, Mary, she gives him her picture and side-by-side comparison and proof that Jack is definitely more of a visual creature. Sylvia's portrait is your standard, turn your shoulder to the side, look pretty with your complexion. It's a more gentle picture. Whereas Mary, she's in a position where it looks like she's kind of ringing onto the car, and it just looks more tomboyish and not as visually appealing as you would think. Because Jack doesn't care about personality right now. He cares about flying and being in love with the prettiest girl on the block. Rude awakening coming right up. Enough harping about that. The more touching goodbye scene that I adore and makes me like David way more as a character. His mom gives him this childhood teddy bear and it's the cutest motif in the film. It's just a tiny little pocket-sized teddy bear and it's just so adorable. And no, that's literally how I felt during this scene. So the teddy bear is going to play a huge role in the film as it's his good luck charm. Luck is going to be a huge theme in this movie. Jack and David arrive at basic training and they pretty much start their rivalry from here because Jack is disappointed at David, to say the least, and that they're fighting over the same girl, then yeah, love triangle, yay! Jack is clearly the more passionately angry one, mostly because his character is the wide-eyed dreamer, very naive, willing to fight, not really control his emotions. Whereas David, although being the wealthiest man in the block, he's just more mature, grown up, and has a lot more restraint than Jack. During a scene when they're doing burpees, Jack repeatedly stomps on David's hat, and as I would expect from a 1920s silent film about two men at war, they bond over a boxing scene where they knock the crap out of each other. Boys will be boys, I guess? After they beat the crap out of each other and knock each other out cold, they're best friends. Just like that. No real explanation, I guess. This is clearly just a plot device to move the movie forward. Jack and David are assigned to live with each other, and their third roommate arrives, named Cadet White, played by Gary Cooper. Gary Cooper's only in the movie for 2 minutes, but his purpose is significant. Not necessarily with the character, but of who he is. The purpose of the character is, while he's about to do, and I quote, his figure eights before chow, for my millennials out there, fly before dinner. Let's clarify that. Save your time on Google, I'll explain. It's fine. David asked him if he flies with a good luck charm because he's holding his little teddy bear. White doesn't necessarily believe in chance or luck or anything like that. A minute later, he crashes his plane and dies. So, very on the nose, but, well, it got really symbolic. Gotta have luck, or else you're gonna die in a plane crash. I mentioned Gary Cooper's important, not necessarily his character. Gary Cooper would become one of the biggest names in Hollywood during the 1940s and 50s. Most notably because he would go on to win 2 Best Actor Academy Awards for his roles in Sergeant York and High Noon. He'd become a big deal eventually, and so for film buffs like me, it's kind of cool to see a future famous actor in a small role like this. But anyway, back to the film. Right after, Jack and David start their first battle as combat pilots as they fight the leader of the so-called Flying Circus, which is a German captain named von Kellerman. The scene is the first of many exciting action scenes, not just for 1927, but even for today. Truly, it's impressive. For instance, there's a moment where a German flyer gets shot in the neck and blood just gushing out while he dies in midair. Sadly, the blood is actually chocolate syrup. It still looks pretty realistic, and just the way they have the camera on the shot, which I'll explain later on this episode, it's truly impressive. David fights against von Kellerman, but his machine gun jams, so it looks like David's finished, but von Kellerman spares him for no reason, except maybe because he's an American that put up such a great fight. That's a big thing. We love America in this movie. Meanwhile, Jack's motor is shot down, and in a moment of desperation, he crashes his plane and hides in a trench. It's starting to look like that he may have fell in a German trench, and he's going to die on the spot, but this is also half an hour into the movie, and we have 2 hours left after that, so he lives. Luckily, the trench that he falls in is full of British soldiers. Let's congest this for a minute, about the massive pro-America theme, the pro-America message in this film. In context, the film was released 9 years after World War I ended, and World War I was the first it's called the Great War for a reason. Particularly the United States' involvement in World War I, this is the first big war they had ever been a part of, so the wounds are still very fresh for people living in this time. Naturally, your movies in that time, especially if they're war movies, they're going to be pro-America because the United States survived this war. They came out practically unscathed. Although the war lasted about 5 years, the U.S. was only involved for not even a year, maybe. Here's where I get critical. The film kind of sacrifices logic for patriotism. It's like the movie will halt for a moment to talk about how great America is. It doesn't flow very well in the film. If it was interweaved a lot better, I would be fine with it, and because it does serve a purpose in this film. Here's what I mean. Jack finds the British trench, and the officer, instead of questioning why an American is here in the trench, what are you up to, the officer instantly welcomes him with a pint and a praise for being a Yank. This is probably not as offensive because England and the United States were allies, still are, but here's where it kind of gets a little bit heavy-handed. There's the comic relief in Wings, and his character has a German name, and his gag is that the American officers are going, "You have a German name. How dare you enter the American army? You suck. Go back home." However, this character constantly compensates himself by holding up his arm, flexing, and to make it even more, I guess, funny. The only purpose this comic relief has in the film is to show off his American flag tattoo that reads Stars and Stripes Forever, and the muscle moves so that the flag looks like it's waving. It's basically Americans can do no wrong, and we're gonna make it very obvious in this movie. Fortunately, this is where the film actually gets better, thankfully, is after Jack and David go through the war, the patriotism message gets condensed. Mary comes back into the film. Yeah, you remember Mary? She comes back into the film as a nurse, and little does she know that the town she's in, which is full of civilians, is going to be ransacked by German-American troops. And this is where Jack and David go into their second battle of the movie. Another highlight in the patriotic moment department. Jack shoots down the central German plane, presumably with von Kellerman in there. It crashes into a village's home. Instead of the villagers seeing this plane crash and freaking out, they actually start cheering for Jack and go, "Yay, America, thank you for shooting down the enemy." It was just funny to see civilians care less about their village being destroyed by fighter planes and just immediately start praising the American for killing the enemy. So the French army praises David and Jack as they get little medals as reward for valor. And you know what this means. It's a party in France, everybody. The soldiers get the day off to go to Paris and do whatever they want. A break from the war. We get a little situational irony here as the generals find out the big drive in the war is coming faster than they thought. So they order all the men to return and report for duty immediately. We got a little conflict here. Jack is drunk as a skunk. This is easily the funniest part of the movie. In a sense, it could be unnecessary. Plus, it involves Mary, who I personally find annoying in this movie, but she serves a purpose as the girl with a caring heart and is the one for Jack and the one to come home to, whatever. Jack's there with the fellow soldiers and a beautiful woman that's probably wanting to take advantage of him. Mary's responsibility is to make sure these soldiers report back, so she attempts to get Jack's attention, except he's a little too busy imagining bubbles coming out of champagne bottles, women's dresses, you name it, he's seen bubbles. Pretty much, the title cards actually are kind of funny. He's like, "Let's go play with the bubbles." Yeah, you can tell either he's a lightweight or this is the first time he's ever been super drunk in his life. And there's just something charming about a drunk guy only giving a crap about bubbles. I liked it. Mary has to makeshift here. So after she cries about how Jack's dumb and doesn't recognize how much of a heart she has, he's just a boy. He doesn't know any better. So this wise old French woman pretty much is like, "Well, put on a revealing dress and try to seduce him. Get your man back." So she does that. The plan works initially as the two are alone in a bedroom now. So she tries to tell Jack to report back. Too bad he passes out because he's drunk. You would think Mary would expect that, but she tried. A for effort. Let's give her A for effort. She tried. Mary gets herself in trouble when two generals walk in on her topless. Oh yes, we have nudity in a 1920s silent film. Perverts, you're welcome. They assume she's keeping Jack hostage for a rendezvous, if you will, and she's kicked out of the war effort and sent back home. So Mary's out of the picture for now. After the big final day in Paris, the big battle's here. Next morning, Jack and David talk about how David thinks he won't make it out alive. He's very scared. So he gives the teddy bear to Jack to keep just in case. That comes into play later, I promise. So Jack takes this as the perfect opportunity to show off his good luck charm, the locket, with Sylvia's picture meant for David. David knows the truth about Jack and Sylvia and how Sylvia does not like him, but is he really going to tell Jack that? It's kind of an awkward situation to be in. Jack goes on and claims that Sylvia loves him, but a little thing. He also defends Mary when her names appear in the papers after being relieved. So there's a man reading it, and he pretty much goes on about how it's assumed that she was a little whore that played around in Paris and tried to get the soldiers. And Jack's just like, "Don't you dare talk about Mary that way." And the man's just like, "Wow, didn't know she was your girl." Yeah, definitely became the little defensive boyfriend there, so I guess this is a character arc in a sense, because then he realizes, oh, I actually care for Mary. Welp. I'm still gonna be mad at David for taking my girl that I think is my girl. Jack's still an idiot. Fights with David over Sylvia. They don't kiss and make up, but they gotta go to their planes. David forgets his lucky bear. Jack ignores him. Off to battle. Back to battling the Germans. As they're battling the Germans, David's plane is shot down and he's presumed dead to everyone, even Jack. So Jack vows revenge on David's death because brotherhood. So what Jack does is he goes after the Germans alone. He doesn't know David's still alive. David, trying to get back to the mainland, he finds a German plane and heads for the Allies to make it back safely. You would think if you knew Jack very well, you would be in danger. Pretty sure David knew that, but again, who knows with this movie. Jack pretty much willing to put his pride before any logic. Jack sees this as the fighter plane that he must kill, so he shoots it till the pilot is near death, which is David. So Jack runs over to the house where David's lying down before he dies. The two share final words. Jack regrets everything. He takes instant blame for David dying, even though David said, "No, it's the war. It wasn't you. You did what you had to do." The two share final words, goodbyes, and their last kiss. Oh yes, a kiss between two men in a 20s silent film. This and a nudie. You would think I didn't realize this was a very progressive film. So, as I said before, Jack instantly takes the blame for David's death, and he carries that shame when he comes back to a hero's welcome. Jack visits David's parents to apologize for their son's death, return the teddy bear, and his medal. So, he still blames himself for David's death, and he's anticipating that the parents are going to blame him too. The mom says, "No, it wasn't you. It was the war." In a melodramatic sense, but you would think because, as I said, the United States was not used to seeing this kind of bloodshed. And, of course, young soldiers back in the day. We're going to have another movie that's going to talk about that on the other side of the argument. These young soldiers were being drafted into the war. They're thinking it's an honorable thing to fight for your country. Simply, they just have no idea what they're getting themselves into. At least the film respects that sense. Not him, the war. So, this depressing war movie, well, it has to have a happy ending. Because, why not? So, Jack realizes he loves Mary all along. Boo. 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 No, I don't like this. Mary and Jack kiss under the stars, and it's happily ever after. Okay, not gonna lie, the ending made me wish that they didn't get together. Probably because I'm just really cynical about romance, I guess. But Jack and Mary should not have gotten together because I would think Jack would be more distraught after what he's seen in the war. And I would expect him more to shut down and ignore Mary more than he does already. But it's the 1920s, it's American film, so happy endings for all. As much as I gripe about this movie, this is a pretty solid film. If you do see this film, you're going to get a 2012 restoration, and it looks so nice. It's got cool features, like in the beginning, where the Paramount logo, it gradually goes from the modern logo, and it goes back in time to the very original Paramount logo from 1927. It goes through a decade change, and it's a nice little touch. I like it. Another thing that's really impressive about this film, especially the restoration, is that the sound comes out fantastic. I got a little bias here, though, because the post-production sound was actually done at Skywalker Studios when it was in Marin County, so I think that's got a little something to do with it. Anyway, the movie just has a ton of interesting backstory with it as well. Other than cast exploits, such as Clara Bow having affairs with nearly every man on the set. As I said, the most interesting backstory is the director, William Wellman, as a World War I combat pilot in real life before filming this movie. Of course, this is probably why I enjoyed the flying and battle scenes so much. It's because Wellman made sure these scenes were shot as perfect as possible. And if you have someone who has lived it firsthand, you want to capture that authenticity. Something that, like I said, done really well. We got a little fun fact here, though. Wellman and Richard Arlen, who played David, both were pilots in World War I. Wellman was in the French Foreign Legion's Lafayette Flying Corps, number 87, Le Chat Noir. In short, he was part of the French Flying Army, but he was shot down in combat and survived the crash, thankfully. But he ended up walking with a limp for the rest of his life. He received the Croix de Guerre, which in French means Cross of War, for his service. After the war, he returns home, joins the U.S. Army Air Corps for 2 years, where he actually taught combat tactics to new pilots at Rockwell Field in San Diego. While Wellman saw combat, Arlen never did, but he was still part of the Royal Canadian Flying Corps and has that flying experience, which Wellman wanted his actors to have. Like I said, he wanted his two main actors to be able to fly to get those dramatic close-ups of them flying that you'll find in this movie. Buddy Rogers, though, the guy who played Jack, he had no pilot experience, but he did train during production along with any extras in the film, and by the end, he could fly. He could pass as a flyer. But surprisingly, with those thousands of extras and those dozen planes flying and explosions everywhere that you have to create in order to capture that dramatic effect in the movie, only two significant accidents occurred. One death and just one fatal injury. But you would think there would be more, especially in 1920. But not as reckless as I thought. Speaking of these close-ups, though, to get those really cool shots of Jack and David flying, the camera was actually propped up to the engine, so it was pretty much right in their face. And it's just clear that a lot of effort went into these combat scenes. Easily, it's why it's the best part of the movie. The cinematography in 1927 holds up better than some war movies released in the past 10 years. I'm not kidding. And then there's that romance plot. It's sadly the main plot. It does give Jack and David something to motivate, not only their actions in the war, but to challenge their friendship and create conflict. It does feel at times, though, that Mary is tacked on in the film. I actually buy this because according to Clara Bow, again, who played Mary, she implies that that actually was the case. Bow was Paramount's biggest star at the time, and this was back in an era where the studios controlled which films their actors appeared in. So she says she was unhappy with her role because she considered herself the whipped cream on top of the pie in a man's picture. Merely decorative. Fortunately, her character is an important one because she does bring the humanity into this war film. And she just has a very positive presence because Clara Bow had these big eyes, spunky personality, and you can tell that she's just a radiant ball of sunshine in the film, which is a very nice contrast to the darkness in the war. While Mary is an important character, it might just be that she was just there for fan service, which is nothing new in big Hollywood productions. You want to get big name actors in your film so that way people will come see your film. Doesn't really matter too much how much your character actually makes sense in the film. Does she serve a purpose in the story? Well, yes. Her character is quickly established as the spunky tomboy who loves and supports Jack. The shooting star motif is necessary to connect Mary and Jack with. The shooting star appears on the car they fix together, and it's the name of the fighter jet Jack flies. As I said, the metaphors in this film are very on the nose. Usually this kind of thing bothers me, especially in modern films, because I believe that moviegoers should actually figure out meanings for themselves. But I can excuse it here a little bit because silent films aren't known for their subtlety. Because there's no spoken dialogue, facial expressions have to be more exaggerated, more dramatic, exposition literally has to be written out. If that sort of thing bothers you, then silent films aren't going to be for you. Character development done very well in this movie. Immediately when we see Mary, Jack, and David on screen, we immediately know what kind of people they are, especially in their interactions in early scenes. The conflicts easily established between Jack and David, the conflicting feelings that Mary has and Jack has. We're not wondering why these characters exist, why these characters act the way they do. It makes sense. This is a good thing about the medium of silent films. The characters have to be directly established, but it's actually really nice and convenient. The plot, it's your standard war with a side of romance plot, but fortunately, this movie that came out in 1927 did a lot better justice to this war film with some romance than, say, Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor in 2001. Yeah, let's just say there is no liberties taken to sacrifice the integrity of the film. Fortunately, because the plot is also so standard, that gives a lot of room for the incredible cinematography, which is definitely probably going to be one of the main reasons why people my age will like this film. Because we get distracted easily if we see cool scenes, especially explosions. We're visual creatures, pretty much. We're much more entertained with seeing interesting shots and all of that, rather than dialogue and character development. Other than the combat scenes, though, because I do praise that a lot, there are other really cool shots in this film, too. So, for example, when Sylvia and David come on screen, they're shown on a swing, and you could easily just have it like a wide shot where you see Sylvia and David swinging on the swing, but it's just a still shot. This is a perspective shot, which means that you actually feel like the camera's on the swing and you're swinging with Sylvia and David. So it looks a little trippy, but it's fun. There's another sequence in the Paris scene where instead of cutting directly to a drunk Jack as a scene cut, the camera will pan through various other couples as if you're getting the atmosphere that you're walking through the party, and then you will reach Jack. So it's little touches like this that make the film stand out. Overall, Winx, not that out of date, shockingly enough. Obviously, I recommend the film as it is the first Best Picture winner, so just for historical value and trivia, yes, check it out. But younger audiences, you're gonna get a kick out of it. It's interesting and entertaining, even if it's nearly 2.5 hours long. At least 90% of it, if not all of it, is entertaining and worth your while. So I give this movie a 7 out of 10. Next episode, we're going to be exploring the first sound film to win Best Picture, The Broadway Melody. That concludes tonight's episode of Millennial at the Movies. Catch me next time at the movies, because remember,
there's no place like home.